From Capital Broadcasting Company and WRAL.com, this is The Wrap at NC Capital.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of The Wrap. I'm Laura Leslie, WRAL Capital BRT.
And I'm Travis Fain, WRAL State House reporter.
And so they're back this weekend. They are back kind of off and running. There was lots of committee action yesterday, lots of committee action today. So let's get right down to what's been moving and shaking in the last day or two. The elections bill that you wrote about last week, that is going to be on the House floor tomorrow for a vote. It went through two House committees today. We learned from Holly Grange, who's one of the bill's co-sponsors. She's co-chair of the elections committee. She said that they did pre-conference this with the Senate, and with the Cooper folks. So basically, everybody is pretty much on board with this. It is a bipartisan bill, as David Lewis put it. Everybody didn't get everything they wanted, but everybody got something.
So everybody not currently suing the state of North Carolina over election rules is cool with this bill.
Apparently.
And now eventually what we'll find out is whether or not a federal judge thinks it addresses the situation, that comes up when you have an election during a pandemic. But there is a 72-page federal lawsuit filed, was it Friday, I believe?
It was last week, yeah.
By the Southern Coalition for Social Justice and Allison Riggs, who's kind of the head honcho over there for these sorts of things, says that this bill is not going to get it done, will not moot that lawsuit. So if you had this at home, it's the easiest bingo game in the world. This is the free space. North Carolina's election rules going into November will be decided by one of several lawsuits, because there are a whole bunch of them still pending. But this bill has got a lot of interesting stuff, got a lot of money in it, for starters.
It's got a lot of money, almost $13 million, actually, between HAVLA funds and CARES Act funding. All but about half a million or so is going out to the counties. And so they get that money to make the election run, but also to pay for personal protective equipment, cleaning supplies, stuff they're going to need at the polls. So, they may end up, it's hard to say what space requirements are going to be in November. There's a lot of unknowns. And that was one of the arguments against this bill, believe it or not. In House rules today, Representative Dana Baumgartner said, I don't know why we're doing this. This is 6 months away. We may not have any problem by November, And J.D. Vols said, what if the executive order expires before then? And Holly Grange said, well, even if that expires, there's going to be a lot of people who are still concerned about their health. And when you stop and think about it, who are the most reliable voters? The highest turnout voters are older people, senior citizens, African-American women, folks. Basically, there's a lot of high-risk folks who are among the groups that show up for both parties. So it is in both their interest to find ways to make sure that those voters can vote and that they don't end up just deciding not to because they're concerned about catching COVID-19.
Also, a significant issue is a lot of older folks work the polls.
Yeah.
And I know in the 11th district, where they've got a runoff coming up later, I guess next month, they've had a bit of a problem staffing up just for a runoff election, so you can imagine what it'll be like come November. Probably worth noting, we're no excuse absentee ballot state. You can request an absentee ballot, get an absentee ballot, and vote an absentee ballot by mail without having to give any reason. Anyone in the state can do it. This bill is going to ease the requirements on the, instead of requiring two signatures or a notary, I believe the bill takes it down to one signature
to one,
that you'll
just
need.
Just for this year.
Just for this year to witness your ballot. That is something that had generated some complaints.
It did, but they also added a requirement that you print, the witness has to print their name and address, which right now they don't have to. So they were saying, in committee today, it's kind of like, it's actually maybe more secure than two witnesses who just like a scribble and you don't even know who that was.
Well, and that is something that, I don't know who all requested it, but it is something that I certainly mentioned and other reporters mentioned, because if you go back to the 9th district situation, where McCray Dallas and his team were harvesting ballots and, witnessing ballot after ballot after ballot. It was hard after the fact. You can get the ballots and you can look at least at the part that was signed, the envelope that gets signed, to see, all right, who witnessed this? But there was no way to be sure if people varied their signature, if it was the same person witnessing ballots over and over and over again, because there was no requirement to print it.
Right.
So that's something that, should we have massive fraud that we need to detect again soon?
That might make it easier.
This would make it easier to do.
Will make it easier. That's also in this bill is barcodes. So they're going to add barcodes on the envelopes for absentee ballots. So they'll be able to the voter will be able to track it, and you the elections officials will be able to track it. So they can verify, like a voter will be able to find out in advance if that application, I mean, if that ballot rather was rejected for some reason, you know, what that was. Get in time to maybe, you know, try to amend it to try to make it right. And officials will be able to tell if these things are, you know, coming in batches, if they're being hoarded, you know, they're being diverted. So, you know, so it does seem like, you know, it is 2020, like literally everything in the world has a barcode on it at this point. So it kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. The other big news today, I think, probably the replacement of Lockhart Taylor.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
At the State Unemployment Office. This is the acting secretary for the Division of Employment Security, a.k.a. the man in charge of the unemployment office, which has obviously been hit with just a, pick your, you know, earthquake, tsunami, whatever disaster you want to put to it. It is a massive influx of unemployment claims, close to more than a million claims.
Right.
Representing almost a million people. And the governor sounds like he's calling in a relief pitcher here. Pryor Gibson, the former lawmaker, longtime lawmaker, and was a Bev Perdue advisor at one point as well. He will take over that office. We didn't get a lot of information about why, but I mean, he's kind of a fixer. You can kind of put two and two together that the governor was not happy. Although lawmakers had expressed, they'd been fairly complimentary of Lockhart Taylor's work.
I mean, everybody understood the situation he was in, right? I mean, nobody's ever seen anything like this before, and the state is simply not set up to handle it. It didn't staff for that because it didn't need it, right? We had such low unemployment for the last 3 years, they had, you know, staffed down. But I will say, I mean, you know, we kept hearing week after week that they were adding people, they were adding capacity, they're going to be processing more claims, but you and I look at those DES reports every single day. You just don't see the short, you know, the backlog diminishing much. You know, it's staying stubbornly at right around 30% of the claims. And so, I mean, that's a problem. And you got people waiting 8 weeks with nothing coming in.
Yeah, it's hard to know exactly. The way they give the numbers and their inability to answer questions at times in a timely manner over there has made it a little difficult to for me to feel comfortable saying, all right, here's what the situation is, here's what the problem is. I think there were a number of problems, one of them just being volume. You know, if you chart all the claims that came in 2009, you know, the recession, it looks like a line that's going up. And I mean, it's just in comparison, there is no comparison. Again, no one has ever seen anything like this where the claims just dump in, you know, a million in 2 months. The system was not built for that. So exactly what the... we'll see. We'll see if things get better now.
And in the meantime, Lockhart Taylor is going to be staying at Commerce in a different capacity, but that's probably helpful so he can work with Gibson, you know, pass on the institutional knowledge, et cetera, to make this work. But it is interesting, and I think it's I think it's probably an admission to some extent that the governor was beginning to see this as a serious problem going into fall.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe...
As a potential Achilles heel.
Maybe had to... I guess I'm just going to rampantly speculate now. Maybe he had to put someone's head on a platter to move forward, or maybe not. Maybe there is a real problem with management there. Couldn't get Lockhart on the phone today. Governor's office not really telling us much. Made some calls. Didn't really shake loose what I felt like was the full story. So hopefully more to come on that. We'll see. You may have read a little bit about some efforts to defraud the system. You may have heard of something called Shattered Canary. This is an operation.
Shattered Canary?
That's right. That is based loosely out of Nigeria. It's essentially...
Why am I not surprised by that?
Apparently, they got the state of Washington's unemployment system for quite a lot of money, potentially hundreds of millions of dollars.
Oh, my.
Now, we were mentioned, North Carolina was mentioned in a Secret Service memo that went out to say, hey, watch out for this thing.
Really?
But that does not necessarily mean our system was hit. I've been reaching out to some folks in the banking industry, credit union folks today. They say that they know that they know that we're involved to the extent that some of the money from Washington State apparently flowed to some accounts in North Carolina. But whether or not our system has been hit, I don't know. But I'm bringing this all back to this morning. There is a bill that would put $2 million toward kind of fraud detection and prevention at DES, at the unemployment office. So that is something that is very much on people's minds.
Especially when you got this much money going out the door. I mean,
yeah.
The more money you got moving quickly, the greater the opportunity is for, I hate to use the fraud, waste, and abuse line, but I mean, let's face it. I mean, whether it's honest mistakes or dishonest ones, it certainly is easier to do it when there's that much volume happening.
Well, and there is clearly this concerted effort among some people to defraud the system while this is all going on. We just don't know yet if it's really made it here, but we're looking into it.
In the meantime, a couple of really interesting bills today. Well, okay, two that are going to be on the floor tomorrow, which would basically set the legislature on a collision course with Governor Roy Cooper. They're bills that are being run by Senator Rick Gunn in Alamance County. One is for restaurants, one is for bars. The restaurants would be allowed to reopen up to 50% capacity temporarily outside. They could set up temporary digs outside to increase their amount of seating if they can find some space that they can get from the landlord or the sidewalk or something, you know. The bars one is probably more controversial because the bars aren't allowed to be open at all right now. Mm-hmm. And what that would do is it would allow them to reopen, but only in outdoor areas, whether they have an outdoor area now, whether they could add a tent or something somewhere on the property. It would allow them to operate at 50% capacity there or 100 people, whichever is less. Now, the bill clearly says, notwithstanding executive orders or municipal orders related to the COVID-19 pandemic. So pretty clear what that's meant to do. It's hard to imagine the governor not vetoing that, but who knows, by the time it gets to him, it may be a moot point.
Well, certainly we'll see if any Democrats vote for it tomorrow.
They did in committee.
They did?
Yeah, it was unanimous. So
and it may not be something, maybe he won't veto it. Maybe, the executive order has set some parameters out that have not been harshly or strictly enforced. I mean, there have been things where the administration seems to be using the executive orders, even though they have the force of law, more as guidelines. And if challenged, they have backed off on some things, like the churches fought a lawsuit.
Right.
The governor ended up backing off. The protests that we've seen, police did not take as hard a line on that, and the governor did not seem to want them to take as hard a line on that. So this may be somewhere where the legislative process brings us to somewhere where we got peace in the valley at the end of the day. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, and then other interesting bills. Number one, the farm bill, which we all remember. So this was a big omnibus bill to help farmers. But in there were two provisions that set a lot of people's hair on fire. One of them was the ban or legalization, depending on whose side you were on this one, Jackson or Dixon, how it would regulate smokable hemp as part of the hemp industry, whether or not it would be banned or whether it could be sold. And then another part of it had to do with shooting ranges and allowing people to set up shooting ranges and call it like agricultural tourism, which means it wouldn't be a subject to zoning rules. Those parts apparently are being removed from it. So I don't know whether we're going to see a vote on that or not. It sounds like all the controversial stuff is dead. I don't know. Nothing's ever dead, especially smokable hemp around here, but I guess we'll find out. Also, Senate Commerce today hearing a bill about drones. delivery drones, basically. Delivery robots, which I think...
Yeah, the kinds that go on the ground with wheels.
So they just, the little doodads that roll around. So I guess you could expect to see if this went through. You can expect, and it's already passed the House. So.
And it moved through Senate committee today. I didn't hear any opposition to it. It was a fairly quick meeting. This is legislation that's passed in a number of other states, I believe. Think of it like a cooler with wheels, that's a robot. And it needs some permissions, I guess, to use the sidewalk.
Well, and it would have 10 miles an hour speed limit on the sidewalk in towns. And then it would have, on the road, 35 miles an hour. So they're saying, well, it would be over on the side of the road, kind of going down the shoulder of the road. They're seeing it as a way to make those last mile deliveries for Amazon and for other companies that are doing so much more delivering these days. Apparently, those companies are testing prototypes in other areas. It's not quite ready for prime time yet, especially not around here. Can you just imagine one of those little robots trying to navigate some of the back roads in Johnson County? There's no shoulder.
Might be for more of an urban environment. Quickly, I'll mention strip clubs had sued the governor over one of his executive orders, obviously, that he shut them down over COVID-19. They did not get their TRO, did not get a temporary restraining order, which means that the executive order remains in effect. The lawsuit still exists. The judge just is not going to say, hey, while we hear this lawsuit, you cannot keep them shut down. So they remain shut down. Gym owners, a coalition of them, sued, I believe, today, filed their lawsuit.
Correct.
I think we're expecting a similar lawsuit from bar owners, but I don't know that it's been filed yet. That may be more preliminary, but I'm not certain on that. So that's kind of your executive order lawsuit watch for the day.
Lawsuit. Full employment for lawyers. That's for sure. So tomorrow, of course, pardon, we're going to be watching that restaurant and bar bill in the Senate. And the House are going to have that elections bill on the floor. They're going to do second and third and send it over to the Senate. And those are the big issues that we're watching for right now. So we will let you know what happens tomorrow night. Have a-
This podcast is a production of WRAL.com, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. If you like the show, we'd appreciate you giving us a review and sharing it with your friends. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app.